Good morning, all. We are waiting for a few members who are on their way to join us. In the meantime, maybe you could help yourself with breakfast there. Otherwise, it may be fruitless and wasteful expenditure if you don't consume it. Thank you. Good morning, all. I propose that we start. We run for the parade. We just short of about 2-3 members, but I propose that we start. They'll join us later. Welcome to the meeting of the Rules Committee. This is a special meeting, which is why we only have one agenda item, and that is further discussion of measures to make appropriate provisions for motions of no confidence in the rules of the National Assembly. The meeting is called to order. We have the agenda, which is up on the screen. Shall we start with the apologies? Are there any apologies?
Speaker, we've received the following apologies: Mr. Watson, Ms. Moloi Moropa, Mr. Mfundisi, Ms. Faltz, Mr. Ndapane, and Ms. Trete.
Okay, those are the apologies that have been received, and these have been duly noted. We have the agenda in front of us, but before we go into the one agenda item that brings us here this morning, I'd like to go to agenda item number 3, which is consideration of the draft minutes of the meeting of the 22nd of February. Shall we start with page 1 simply for correctness? Page 1 for correctness. Page 2 for correctness. Page 3 for correctness. Page 4 for correctness. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6 for correctness. Page 7. Page 8. Page 9 for correctness, and page 10. I've galloped through the minutes. The assumption is that people have had a chance to look at the minutes. So, are there any corrections? Are the minutes a true reflection of the meeting that took place on the 22nd of February? Are we happy to adopt the minutes? And the one who moves in second must be people who were at the meeting. Okay, I'm told there is no quorum yet, but when we do have a quorum, we'll come back and officially sign off on the minutes. Good, thank you very much. We then go on to agenda item number 4. Again, we start with page 1. Matters arising. Page 2. Anything arising from page 2? Page 3. Anything arising from page 4? Page 5. Page 6. Page 7, page 8, anything arising after page 9, and page 10. So there are no matters arising. Can we have the agenda up again, please? Okay, there's the agenda. We then move on to agenda item number 5. I noticed that there's some documents that have been distributed. And do you need a couple of minutes to finish reading the documents? Okay. Thanks. Okay, I'm sure we can proceed. What I'd like to do is to invite Honorable JJ to talk to the document which has been distributed. I hope everybody has a copy. And Honorable JJ will walk us through the document. Then I'll open the floor for comments and discussions. And I'm hoping that there will be broad consensus. We've gone through these processes. The last time we had two sets of papers, one from the opposition, one from the ANC. And we had a long, very long discussion. We adjourned the meeting and asked members to go back to their parties to consult and then come back. And we hope that we will be able to do justice to the proposals in front of us. We don't have much time before the Constitutional Court, so we hope that there will be broad consensus that we can take to the Constitutional Court. But I'd like Honorable JJ to walk us through the document.
Speaker, thanks.
He is right behind you. Yes.
Speaker, I don't know if I understood you correctly. Are we expected to make decisions about this document today?
Yes, ideally, yes.
Yeah, because we only received it when we walked in here. And I will certainly not be prepared to make a decision without proper consultation. It's a very complicated thing which is before the courts. I cannot take a decision.
Okay, we will bear that in mind, but we'll ask Honorable JJ to walk us through the document.
Speaker, thanks. I mean, maybe this is a proposal from the ANC, and it's following on from the discussions that we had in the last Rules Committee meeting, and it's an attempt to try and present something that would address concerns from some of the other parties. I think members have received it. Yes, they only got it this morning because we were finalizing it until late. But it does deal with issues that have been quite substantially aired before. But the first item is that a member may propose a motion of no confidence in the President or Cabinet in terms of Section 102 of the Constitution for approval as a resolution of the House and state the grounds for the motion. You will notice that we've removed the references in our earlier proposal to motions of no confidence in the Speaker and Deputy Speaker. That is also a gap in the rules, but we felt that given that inclusion was misconstrued last time by some members, that let's separate it out and we can come back to filling that lacuna later. Maybe to say the overall approach that we're adopting is one where motions of no confidence should be debated, but they shouldn't be abused. And I think generally from the parties there was a view that yes, it wouldn't be correct to have motions of no confidence called on a weekly basis that then had to be debated on a weekly basis. Number two, the Speaker must decide on the scheduling of the motion after consultation with the Leader of Government Business, the Chief Whip of the Majority Party, and the Chief Whip's Forum. So it's in deciding on the scheduling, the Speaker must consult those parties. It's primarily with a view as to availability, there was an issue raised last time which wasn't in our proposal because our proposal contained the Leader of Government Business and the Chief Whip. The inclusion of those two office bearers was not really on their views on the motion, but on availability issues, availability of cabinet, availability or the Chief Whip being responsible for the program of Parliament. There was a view that other parties should be included, and hence the inclusion of the Chief Whip's Forum. That's a consensus-seeking body, so the views would be then the views that any party wishes to express in that body, but it's easier doing it as a collective. And yeah. The other aspect to highlight is it's after consultation, so nobody has a veto. The Speaker has the power to decide on the scheduling. Then when it is scheduled, consideration of the motion of no confidence by the House must take place in a reasonable time. And linked to that, if it cannot be reasonably scheduled by the last sitting day of an annual session, It must be scheduled for consideration as soon as possible in the next session, as if the notice had been given on the first sitting day of the session. So the issue that we faced ourselves with this year, had the DA wanted to discuss, have their motion debated, and it having lapsed, that takes care of that. We felt that to set specific times like the opposition proposal of decision within 7 days and scheduling within 30 days was sort of fairly mechanical. Number point five is a standard one. It shan't exceed the time allocated by the Speaker after consultation with the Chief Whip of the Majority Party as chairperson of the Chief Whip's Forum. That's on a scheduling matter. I think that's in our rules already on other matters. Then, if a motion of no confidence is proposed a second time in respect of the same matter in the same annual session, the Speaker must decide on the scheduling of the motion after the consultation in two, that's Leader of Government Business, Chief Whip, Chief Whip's Forum. Having considered whether the scheduling of the motion is supported by at least a third of the members of the National Assembly, and C, having considered whether another motion of no confidence brought on the same or materially similar grounds was rejected during that annual session. That's basically an attempt to screen to prevent abuse. Our reading would still be, even if any of those points applied, the Speaker could, for whatever reason, still decide to proceed with having a consideration of a second motion. But those are factors that would then come into play more with regard to the second and subsequent motions of no confidence. Then the sub 7, which is the existing practice, notwithstanding Rule 96, an amendment to a motion of no confidence may be moved at the conclusion of the debate to express confidence in the subject of the motion. That is the practice that was followed, I think, in the Dandala motion, in the Jinwala motion, Speaker Jinwala. And I recall there was a motion of no confidence expressed in Honourable Gibson, the then Chief Whip of the Democratic Alliance. And the Democratic Alliance proposed an amendment to that motion expressing confidence in him, which was rejected. But that procedure is generally being followed. And then the last point is basically a consequential one of if a motion is approved, then the Speaker must inform the Leader of Government Business, because it's then up to a Cabinet, or it's if it's not, yeah. Anyway, that's just a procedural point. So, Speaker, in proposing this, we're trying to accommodate the concerns that some of the other parties raised. We don't want a mechanism that's too mechanical. The key issue is the power really rests with the Speaker. And maybe also to remind honourable members that in the Mazibuko application to the court, one of the arguments that application arose because there was a deadlock. The programming committee couldn't decide, and that resulted in a deadlock. One of the arguments that the opposition raised was that the Speaker should decide. And when the point was raised that the Speaker doesn't have the power, the argument was then that the Speaker has residual powers. The court, though, rejected the argument about the Speaker's residual powers, but what we are effectively providing for here is specifically giving the Speaker powers to decide on the matter. So, Speaker, that's the essence of the proposal. I'm not sure if any of my colleagues want to add.
Thank you, Honourable JJ. Before I give members an opportunity to comment, are there any additions? ANC? On the document in front of us? No. Okay. Honourable Dr. Mulder?
Yes, thank you, Honourable Speaker, Chairperson. In terms of the process, if I remember correctly, at the last programming committee meeting, the whole question was discussed, and obviously we all realize the importance because it's in front of the courts. The Constitutional Court is waiting to hear from us. At the end of that meeting, it was suggested that there may be some informal meetings and discussions between parties to see if we can resolve the issue. I'm not aware that any of those discussions took place. In any case, I was not involved in any of those. So the effect of that reality is that we are now having this proposal, as our colleague Mr. J.J. indicated just now, that this is a proposal from the ANC side, and we've just seen this now for the first time. That's the first point I would like to make. That makes it very difficult to take any specific decision with regard to this, because one would like to discuss and like to consult because of the legal implications in the first instance, and in the second instance, I've got problems, and I cannot, for that reason, support the proposal.
Let me get to the essence of it. And the essence, as far as I'm concerned, we find in the proposed proposal in terms of Clause 2. Clause 2 says, as it's formulated now, the Speaker must decide on the scheduling, and then it goes on after consultation. The essence is the basic question: would this allow the Speaker to decide on the scheduling because it's going to be scheduled, or does this mean that the Speaker will have a discretion to decide not to schedule at all, and then it falls away because the Speaker decides he's not going to schedule it? It means that the Speaker has no discretion, that it needs to be discussed, and that the Speaker is only going to consult to see in terms of availability, as was said, then it's something else. Then the clause should read, the Speaker must the Speaker must schedule the motion after consultation. Then it should say that clearly. But the way I understand it is that there's a discretion given to the Speaker, and that the Speaker may decide not to schedule at all. We cannot support that. Then it goes to the second part 3, where it talks within a reasonable time, and it brings us to point 4. If a motion cannot be reasonably scheduled at the last sitting day, and it must go to the next session. That's exactly what happened last year. And with all due respect, if I look at the programme of Parliament since 1994, to me, it's not acceptable that we can ever have a situation where the programme is allegedly so full that something as serious as a motion of no confidence cannot be found time for. We can look at the programme. It doesn't make sense. And then it comes to the other things. The last point I would like to make is with regard to point 7, clause 7, which we also strongly object to, because the argument is basically this. If you propose a motion of no confidence in a person, and that is being discussed, then the majority can still obviously use their majority to defeat that proposal. But it should not be a situation, and even if it's a practice in the past, then it was wrong, it should not be the practice that then you just suddenly turn that into a motion of confidence in that person without that even having been discussed. The thing that was discussed was a motion of no confidence, and the reason for that has been given. So I know that the ANC feels strongly about this, that they would like to use the majority. They can use their majority to defeat the motion of no confidence. But it should not be just to return that quickly into a motion of full confidence. But as I said, Honourable Speaker, we've just seen this for the first time. I would like to consult. I cannot support this, and if we are forced to decide and to vote, I will be voting against this proposal.
Thank you very much. Noted. Honourable Italian.
Thank you, Speaker. I echo some of the sentiments of my colleague, Honourable Mulder. We've seen this for the first time, and the party has not had a chance to look at it, and I would like the opportunity to take it back. And I'm aware of the time constraints, but at the same time, we need to consult and look carefully at it. I also have a few questions for clarity. One of it is around point 2. What is the role of the programming committee in this respect? Because you mentioned the leader of government business, the chief of's forum, but nothing to do with the programming committee. So, in other words, is it taken out of them, away from them? What is a reasonable time under point 3, under point 4? We are now saying that this is a new rule. So if it cannot come in, be fitted in one sitting, so automatically the motion of no confidence will not lapse and does not need to be revived. I think I would need clarity on that. And my colleague will also add a few comments.
Sure. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. There are certainly some improvements to what the initial proposal was, but I echo a number of the other concerns that have been raised. The whole point of the DA's case was that it was based on urgency, and there is international precedent for motions of no confidence being dealt with on an urgent basis. So I think to say that it must be done within a reasonable time is really not within the spirit of that precedent, and I don't think we can accept that. As my colleague said, we will need to take it back to the party, but I mean, there needs to be some kind of time frame. Who's going to decide what is reasonable? And we can't be expected to go running off to court every time we disagree with maybe the interpretation of what reasonable is. It's an important motion. It's really in the interest of the country that it be heard, and it's far more it's better for all concerned to have a clear understanding of when that time frame is going to be. The other concern I do have, as far as clause 6 is concerned, is that I'm also concerned that having to rely on a third of the members supporting whether the motion should take place or not will actually deprive an individual member of their right to put the motion, which the Concord, as far as I understand, I think in the Ambrosini matter, has already said is a right that should be exercised by any member of Parliament. Now, to require a third of the members to agree to that, I think may well be in violation of that right. But other than that, just on point 7 also, whether we agree to 7 or not, we can't say at this point, but one thing we could consider, I think, is if you want to change it into a motion of no confidence given, a motion of confidence given precedent in this House, we could perhaps consider, if you would consider maybe also adding a proviso that any debate on the motion will be confined to the grounds mentioned in the motion of no confidence, not on any alternative proposed amendment. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honourable Killian.
Thank you, Speaker. Speaker, at the outset, I just wanted to express disappointment that we did not have an opportunity to engage further. We would have had a possibility to correct some of the points that are raised here, by some of the colleagues here. But it is a pity. Honourable John Jeffrey has indicated that they only completed it in the early hours of the morning, and that was therefore not possible to engage with us. So after the previous rules meeting, we have effectively not had any attempt to engage further to try and see if we can reach a consensus position. So I just want to put that on record. Secondly, Speaker, I want to share some of the concerns raised by colleagues. First of all, even on item 1, I must state grounds for the motion. Now, Speaker, yes, our rules make provision for specific motions, and we have, in fact, had a successful motion moved before, except that it was in the end then turned from a motion of no confidence into a motion of full confidence, which was, as far as we are concerned, against Rule 96 of the House. Irrespective of the fact that that could have been the practice, if that was the practice in the past, that does not necessarily make that acceptable practice, because that, if it's against the rules and it's against the spirit of the motion, then clearly that cannot be accepted. Speaker, then, I also want to say that in terms of Section 2 as proposed here, I want to share the concern about must decide on the scheduling. It must be must schedule, and the fact that there should also be the reasonable time issue in sub 3 is a concern. That is problematic. Reasonable time can mean that it can stretch further and it can be spaced in such a way. We have indicated during our deliberations in the task team that we prefer a position of taking the matter taking precedence due to the seriousness of a motion of no confidence. So clearly that would also not make us support paragraph 4. Then the same applies to 6. I think at the root of it is basically a concern that it was part of the documentation that was submitted by the Chief Whip in the matter before the Constitutional Court, where he intimated that the majority is entitled within acceptable democratic processes and rules to resist the scheduling of a motion of no confidence. And that is why we are concerned about certain provisions there as well. That it is a mechanism that we are putting in place, if we do accept this, that it would be able for the majority party to try to not schedule such a motion in time. Lastly, Speaker, I feel that in support of what colleagues said, we will not be in a position to adopt this. I would like to put on the record of the House that the position as captured on page 6 of the minutes, the recommendations as proposed by the group of parties, I would like to align myself to that. That is the only mandate that I have at present, and therefore I have no mandate to give support, but maybe we can find each other, but there would have to be significant movement on the proposal as submitted to this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before I give the floor to JJ, Honourable JJ, Honourable Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Speaker. The way I read this, I get the impression, firstly, that the Speaker decides on his own whether there will be a debate or not. Secondly, the Speaker decides how much time will be allocated. That is the impression I get. And then also we would like to have a provision that the eventual voting must be by secret ballot. But then lastly, this concerns the amendment, no, it's 7, the amendment that you changed it from a motion of confidence to full support. I remember when I came here 35 years ago, the first debate was a motion of no confidence by Jaapi Bason and others against the National Party. At the end, there was an amendment that we should rather accept a motion of full confidence in the government and not a motion of confidence of no confidence. And then, obviously, there was voting, and the motion of no confidence was then changed, and there was a motion of full confidence. I believe this happens very regularly, and I will not make war about Clause 7 then.
Thank you very much. Yes, please.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Just one point that I forgot is that we... Sorry.
Please, one person at a time. Please go ahead.
One thing that I forgot to mention is that we had asked last time for inclusion of a secret ballot for this motion, and that appears nowhere either, and we still want a secret ballot. We feel that it's vital for a motion such as this to have a secret ballot provision for people to be able to exercise their choice freely.
Can I just correct my honourable colleague that happened 35 years ago? That was when we had a Westminster majority rule parliament. We now have a constitutional parliament.
I thank the Honourable Professor.
No, please. I don't want to open a debate about that. Honourable Chairman.
Speaker, thanks. Just to respond to some of the points, I think the first point is that, yes, the Speaker does have a discretion whether to schedule or not to schedule. And let me just explain on that point. The issue is basically, does an individual member have a right? An individual member has a right to table a motion of no confidence. Does an individual member have a right to have that motion debated? You have a one-person party. I mean, remember the Constitution, the section is not an express right. It's a consequential section. If a motion of no confidence is passed, this is what happens. And it's basically, I mean, we think the Speaker should schedule motions of no confidence. But it is a case of, let's say, there's a one-person party. I don't want to start naming parties that are not here, but let's say there's a lunatic party. They get one seat. They want a motion of no confidence. It goes to the Chief Whip's Forum. All the other parties say, actually, no, we don't want this motion of no confidence. The Speaker could then decide, no, he thinks or she thinks the lunatic party should have the opportunity. Or the Speaker could decide, well, none of the other parties want it. It's a waste of time. Now, this is a moot point in the court, that the Constitutional Court may have to look at, but it is different from the issue of the introduction of private members' bills, which were specifically private members, so they related to an individual, a member as an individual, and they, so that's one point. Also to say, many parliaments have thresholds. India, you need the support of 50 members, which I think is 10%, to get a motion of no confidence. Uganda, you need a third. And what's interesting, and I'm surprised with Ms. Schaefer's point of, when it comes later to the subsequent motions of no confidence, She was raising concern with 6B, having considered whether the scheduling of the motion is supported by at least a third of the members of the National Assembly. That came from the opposition proposal. I'm saying it was a third of the members. That was from the opposition. So it's clear that even in the discussions in the subcommittee, which Ms. Schaefer wasn't part of, there was generally agreement that it would not be correct to have motions of no confidence scheduled every week. Okay? So that's basically why that discretion is given to the Speaker. That is what the opposition wanted, or the DA wanted in the Mazibuko case, the Speaker to be able to decide. That's what we're saying we're giving. And we would think that the Speaker would be unlikely to reject, but if it is this case of a one-person party, then that is something that they should have the power. Then the reasonable time. Look, I mean, remember that that matter was put to the Western Cape High Court, which declined to insist that the motion must be scheduled. There was an approach to the Constitutional Court on the urgency issue, and it also declined on that aspect. Obviously, given the experience of this whole past motion, one would imagine that the Speaker would not unnecessarily delay, and reasonable is an objective test anyway. You know, as far as you then run into problems of the matter taking precedence, as Mrs. Killian wants, but, you know, must it take precedence over the State of the Nation debate? Must it take precedence over the budget speech? And the provision then under 4 is precisely to allow it to be not to have the situation we had this year, that if you want to debate it as soon as possible, the first proper sitting day of the new year, that it can be. Then the issue of the Programming Committee, in the light of the problems with the process last time and the Programming Committee is not involved directly in this issue. Effectively, they would be covered by the consultations with the Chief Whip and with the Chief Whip's Forum. But we felt that it, given the problems with the Programming Committee, that's why it was taken out. Then the issue of look, 96 has been dealt with, and okay, it's useful, Mr. van der Merwe, talking about the practice in the pre-94 Parliament. It then has also been the practice in the post-94 Parliament, as we've raised, and it's been the practice not just by the ANC. The DA moved a motion, moved motion of an amendment to the motion of no confidence in Mr. Gibson. So they've used it. And I think I don't think it's a particularly political constitutional question. It's a question of the motion is debated. At the end of it, you can move your amendment. That has been the practice. On the secret ballot, well, the reason it's not in this proposal is that we reject it. We reject it as being potentially unconstitutional, in that the Constitution provides for a secret ballot, provides specifically for a secret ballot for the election of the President and the Speaker and the Deputy Speaker, I think. It doesn't say anything about the votes of no confidence having a secret ballot. What the Constitution does say is that the National Assembly must adopt rules, and this is a rule that we are proposing. And what the Constitution does say about the rules that the National Assembly must adopt is that they must make rules and orders concerning its business with due regard to representative and participatory democracy, accountability, transparency, and public involvement. Now, I'm not sure how you can argue that a secret ballot is accountable and transparent. Because it's completely not transparent. You don't know who voted. We are concerned that it opens up the door for potential checkbook politics, and particularly if you apply it to provincial legislatures, whatever, it's effectively untransparent and undemocratic. And we think it may run into constitutional problems. But I think the key issue is basically there seemed to be agreement from the parties that there should be restrictions on the ability of members to have motions of no confidence debated to prevent abuse. And all the parties were in agreement with that, and that is what is done elsewhere in some parts of the world with thresholds. All we're doing, we're not specifying what that is, all we're doing is giving the power to the Speaker ultimately to decide. I think it was Mr. van der Merwe that was raising that point, and that is correct. And that is what the DA wanted in the Mazibuko application.
Thanks, Honourable JJ. Honourable Masuta.
Hey, thank you, Speaker. I align myself with everything that Honourable John Jeffrey has said. I just wanted to contextualize one or two issues which I think might be helpful. We believe that the Speaker acts in providing leadership overall to the institution within the framework of the Constitution. So he's there to uphold the values of the Constitution with regard to participatory democracy, multi-partyism, etc., etc. And he does so in respect of everything that he does every day in the House. So you don't even need to write guidelines for him or her to say, this is how you should conduct Parliament. And as a result, you even have a provision in the Constitution that if you feel that the Speaker, you no longer have confidence in him or her because he's no longer upholding those values, he's no longer promoting this multi-party democracy and participatory values, you can vote, you can move a motion of no confidence against the Speaker himself, which has actually been done before when Speaker Ginola was still Speaker. So we believe that there are sufficient safeguards to put faith in the Speaker to be able to act in an impartial and rise above his own party, let alone all other parties, in the interests of these values in the Constitution. We believe that the Speaker should not exercise that discretion in isolation. Hence, there is reference especially to him having to take account of the views of the Chiefs Forum. We believe that that platform creates the space for all parties, big and small, to have to articulate their own views and to ensure that their own interests are taken into account. And the Speaker is now obligated in terms of this rule to make sure that in exercising that discretion, he does not ignore the engagement, not just the views of one or other party, but the actual engagement between the parties themselves, arising out of those engagements. And we also feel that the programming committee comes out of the equation, obviously because in the first place it became clear that when it comes to issues of this nature, you may have difficulty in reaching consensus, and we did not want a situation where you now want to change the character of the programming committee, where you put a majority principles of proportional representation, have the ANC have a majority, and then bulldoze things in that manner. The whole process of setting the program of Parliament traditionally over the past two decades has been on consensual basis and would want to retain that kind of value. What actually happens then is that on a Tuesday at 12 o'clock, a structure called programming technical. It sits where the chief whip through his programming whips develops the draft program. It goes to the chief whip's forum the following day where all political parties are represented through their senior whips and all interests of political parties are accommodated. Now when it goes to programming, and that's why programming is only a 30-minute meeting, all has been agreed politically. Because we must not ignore the political character of the institution, because that's what drives the institution. So we believe that there are sufficient safeguards to ensure that there is no risk of the Speaker exercising arbitrary powers in this instance, or arbitrariness in exercising his discretion, since his decision would have been informed by all these processes. By the time the Chief Whip signs off the order paper on a Friday, after programming, caucuses have also even set to consider the program that was agreed on the Thursday morning. And if there are new issues, the Chief Whip has the opportunity to take those into account before he signs the order paper. And then, of course, you still have the speaker who has the overall responsibility of ensuring fair play in the running of the institution. And if you look at Chapter 8 of the rules, on issues of public importance, there the rule book simply assigns that discretion entirely in the hands of the speaker because of the nature of the issue. So already we have a precedent in the rules as they stand where the speaker is given the responsibility in a case which might be highly controversial, a matter that might be highly controversial, politically conflictual, where he would then take the matter above the fray of the party political wranglings and decide informed by the values, the constitutional values I've just outlined. So we think that the necessary balance would be achieved with the kind of arrangement we're proposing. I thank you, Speaker.
Thank you very much. I'm advised that we now have a quorum and that we can adopt both the agenda and the minutes of the previous meeting. Are we all happy? Does anybody want to move the adoption of the minutes formally? Any seconder? Seconder, okay.
I just wanted to inform the meeting that the following members have been co-opted. They are not members of this committee. Honorable Khadebe, Honorable Lekhepo, Honorable Tili, Honorable Makubele, and Honorable Simiye.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome to our meeting. You have the meeting to correct, and we have now adopted the minutes of the previous meeting. Okay, we've had the presentation by Honorable JJ. We've also listened to the parties. So there are two possibilities. One is maybe allow further caucus or agree that parties can go back, members can go back and consult, and that the chief whip of the majority party will be responsible for arranging for further discussions, and that we then formally meet on Tuesday next week, which is the last date. What will the date be on Tuesday?
Tuesday is the 12th, Speaker. Then 14th we must submit to the Constitutional Court.
14th we must submit to the Constitutional Court. So the last practical date will be the 12th. So we allow parties to go and consult. It is their right. We ask the chief whip of the majority party to interact with the parties for further consultations so that when we get to the meeting of the 12th, we don't reopen the discussion that we've had previously. We come with concrete proposals about the way forward and what it is we want to take collectively to the Constitutional Court. Yes, sir.
When we meet on Tuesday, will opposition parties be allowed to make, shall I say, majority inputs which will all serve before the court?
The assumption is that we continue the process. The opposition parties did put a proposal last time, and the ANC had its proposal, and this was, you know, in a sense trying to marry the two, but we think it's better to allow the parties to go and consult further, and that the chief whip of the majority party will continue as before, making sure that there's consultation, adequate consultation, so that by the time we meet on the 12th, we would have moved a step forward, if not two steps forward. The meeting, what time?
Because the meeting, the time of the meeting must still be determined, but it's likely going to be in the morning on Tuesday. Must find a venue, failing which it will be after the sitting. The sitting for Tuesday is likely to last for 2.5 hours. Is it 2.5 hours? 3.5 hours, sorry. 3.5 hours.
Shall we try for the morning? It's better to have this in the morning. Honorable JJ?
I suggest, there's not too much time. Maybe after the sitting, there may need to be consultations in the morning. It shouldn't be a long meeting, Speaker, I don't think. I mean, it, like this meeting wasn't long, and particularly if there's been consultations. But given that a number of members are not in Cape Town on Monday because of being a constituency day. That it may be better to have it in immediately after the sitting.
Office would prefer Shall we agree in principle that it must be in the morning? It allows, you know, people also to prepare the documents for the Constitutional Court. So afternoon will be too late. So let's agree to meet in the morning. We'll find time in the morning. What time are we happy? 9 o'clock? 10? Okay, and let's make it 10 o'clock Tuesday morning. But it doesn't stop consultations going on, even after this meeting. Honourable Kubai?
Speaker, my concern is that we are going to battle with quorum. 10 o'clock is still committee time. Majority of our members would be in committees. No, Comrade Blenders, we can't, because committees have already have their schedule, and they have people presenting to them. To go and tell them, now cancel your meeting for next week. You're just throwing committees out of the land. Would want to appeal to an afternoon meeting.
11:30 is the proposal. Will that take care of the committee meetings? Honourable Frolic, chairperson of committees. 12:30? 12:30.
Presumably if it's 12:30, lunch may result in members not being...
No, if you have lunch, the meeting won't end.
No, I'm saying the meeting may be concise because of the desire to get lunch before
so the lunch we will consider after the meeting. Okay, we only had one agenda item. Unless the urgent issues, I propose that we agree to adjourn the meeting. And thank you very much. Consultations can continue. Honourable JJ, I see you've already started. Please continue. All right.